for 11 years in a row. Ranking Arizona's number one most trusted referral network, RosieOnTheHouse.com.
Information that you can't get anywhere else.
And over three decades of Rosie on the House.
Come on in, y'all. On this Independence Day edition of Rosie on the House, my door is wide open. Come on in and join the conversation if you'd like. Give us a call at 1-888-767-4348. We're here with...
When you hear the auto attendant, just hit 1 to bypass the message, and that'll get you right into the studio.
That's right. That's an auto response. Just hit 1, and that'll send you straight to us. You'll bypass all that speech. We're here this morning doing what we can to become your best friend. And one of the things we always take a look at is, what are people reaching out to us for? What are the questions they're asking us about their home? And believe it or not, the one question we saw more often than any other question in the last week or 10 days was, how can I find a stud? I guess people must be buying things that need to be hung, would be my guess. And
a little redecorating.
And I tell you, when I started in the trades, we got pretty good at just using our finger, and we would just tap the sheetrock, and you could tell acoustically when you were on top of the stud or not. But as our ears get older, it became a little harder. And they developed these stud finders that actually you mount on the wall or press on the wall, move it across the wall horizontally, and it will kind of give you some light indications as to where that stud is or not. And that helped. That was pretty good. But here, fairly recently, I want to say maybe 5 or 6 years ago, they came out with a stud finder that actually pinpoints the edges of each side, so you're not mistakenly driving that nail that's going to hang your whatever, your mirror. You're not mistakenly just catching a corner of the stud. You're finding the dead center of it, gaining the bulk of all the strength that that nail can hold. And something as simple as a drywall nail nailed into a stud, left out just far enough for your wire to get back behind the head. I always like drywall nails because they have a real thin little head, and you can tuck them in close to the wall and it doesn't hold the picture out. But just that one nail in a stud is capable of holding approximately 200 pounds. So I think most people are surprised. And if you can't find a stud, or if the stud isn't where you want to hang that picture, Here's the secret. Take that drywall nail. A drywall nail's a bit sharper than a lot of other nails. Slope it slightly down so that when you're done, the wire will hang on the hook and be pushed against the wall. Do not take that nail with your hammer and go tap, 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 tap. Every time you tap it, you're degrading the integrity of the sheetrock. Get the nail right where you want it, take your hammer, and with one swipe, hit it and set it. Just the drywall nail in drywall will support about 65 pounds, but don't tap it in. Drive it with one quick, smooth, swift stroke and be done with it. Now, that fits well with our topic of the week, which, if you're a subscriber to our newsletter, we demonstrate in a great article, and I think it's one of the better articles we've done because we photo enhanced it with a recent job. We're asked, I mean, when I get a phone call at the office, we're thinking about doing a remodel. The first thing I ask them is, well, what general area are you in? And if it's central Scottsdale, south central Scottsdale, Arcadia East, Arcadia West, any of the Madison Meadow area, invariably, it's going to be, I'm in a ranch home built in the 50s or the 60s or 70s. As I walk in the front door, I'm in the living room. You can kind of look across the living room to what's the dining room. and then I go past a wall that divides the middle of the house into the family room and the kitchen. That's the ranch floor plan that we built tens of thousands of them in the 60s and the 70s. And everybody wants to get rid of that wall. And they ask me, is it load-bearing? I can tell you, any wall running down the middle of your house, if your house was built before about 1975, chances are it's load-bearing. And it may be load-bearing, even if it's newer than that. And we demonstrate in this article how we set up the dust protection walls, how we saw cut the concrete, put the post in, put the beam in, and you can have the beam either flush with the ceiling, the bottom of the beam flush, so you make your drywall repair and you don't see anything. Some people opt to leave the beam down below and leave it as an exposed architectural element. You can do it either way. But we'll be covering more about load-bearing and non-load-bearing walls through the course of this hour. We'll also be sharing some interesting information on history with Assistant Professor of History, Dr. David Dean from Grand Canyon University, repeat guest by demand. We always get a great feedback whenever Dr. Dean joins us on air.
I demand to be back on. Wait.
And we're talking Independence Day. And I just love hitting the pause button because you kind of gloss over it. You go, July 4th, okay, it's the day the Declaration of Independence was signed and approved. But you forget everything that kind of leads up to this. And, you know, one of the more interesting characters in history, I think, is that first president of the Continental Congress.
Well, he was the first. He succeeded John Hancock. But you're talking about Henry Lawrence from South Carolina. And what's interesting about him is he really represents that planter merchant class that really fermented that revolution. He had direct experiences with England and the policies of government that were infringing on his business and his ability to run in his operations. He had mobs of people come into his house and ransack it, looking for evidences of the Stamp Act on his papers, his personal papers. He had his ships that were taking goods that were produced in South Carolina, like rice and indigo, over to England and coming back with wine. He had those ships confiscated and boarded for customs enforcements and things that were all part of the colonial experience and the heavy hand of the British government, that the colonists were saying, hey, we don't need all these things. And so ended up serving in the Continental Congress. Right after John Hancock was the president of Congress, he succeeded him. And then during the war, he was actually sent on a delegation to help raise money for the effort to Holland. And on his way over,
the Treasury had no money for a war.
No,
none.
Well, and the way they financed the war was they went around to each of the states and said, hey, we need to pay some troops. We got to buy some guns and some shoes and, you know, Funyuns and DVDs and stuff for the troops and stuff. So they had pickles. They had to buy it. And so in doing so, they had to raise the money by asking the states for the money. They couldn't just raise a tax. And so it was a very complicated process, and we needed the help of other governments. Part of the declaration was help telling other governments, hey, we're declaring our independence, and we're going to rely on you to help us, you know, establish our freedom. And so on his way over to Holland, his ship was boarded, and his mission was found out, and he was hauled off to London, and he spent 15 months in the Tower of London as a prisoner.
And his name again?
His name was Henry Lawrence from South Carolina. He's one of the first South Carolinians, even though he did own slaves and had participated in the slave trade early in his career, he eventually got away from that. And reading the Declaration of Independence just reminded him of how much he abhorred slavery and worked the rest of his life against that. He saw how it was bad for everyone. There was no good that could come from it. And as a good Christian person, he recognized the error of his ways and fought, as that was part of what he believed the Declaration was all about, that freedoms for all that John Locke had talked about. And so he spent 15 months over in the Tower of London, and I don't know if you've ever been there, Rosie, but
no, I haven't.
It's an amazing place, but it's not a place that you want to vacation at if you're in the 16th century, 17th century, because it's just a prison, a jail. And there are many political prisoners there that went through and were executed and whatnot there. So your fate at the Tower of London was always kind of suspect.
Oh, boy. And it didn't fare well for him. He ended up being ill basically the rest of his life.
Right. It really took a toll on him. He was later selected to be part of the peace delegation and couldn't actually go through with a lot and couldn't attend the actual signing of the peace treaty in 1783 because he was ill because of his time in prison. But the only way they got out, and just to the point about how important he was, we had to trade General Cornwallis for him. That's how we got him out of prison, was we traded Cornwallis, who we captured at Yorktown. Washington had captured him, the senior general for the British Army. We were able to trade Cornwallis for Lawrence to get him back.
It had to be somebody pretty valuable.
Yeah. So Cornwallis, of course, you know, ran the Southern campaign, was doing pretty well until he made the mistake of hanging out at Yorktown, and then the French came up from the south and blocked his retreat from the British Navy, and then Washington surrounded him, and war was over for him.
All right. We're diving deep into American history today. We're going to be diving deep into load-bearing and non-load-bearing walls, and we'll dive deep into any topic you'd like to address at your house. Just ring 1-888-767-4348. There's an auto attendant there. Just press 1, and it'll come straight through to the studio. And we'll start a conversation on whatever project you're trying to tackle around your house, home, castle, or cabin here at Rosie on the House. We'll be right back.